Hey, folks, coming up next in this interview, I'm sitting down with the amazing Dixie Dixon.
This is TWIP.
Hey, folks, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I'm your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today, I have the honor and pleasure of sitting down with the illustrious Nikon shooting Dixie Dixon. She's going to join us to talk about her world and some of the things she's working on and what led her here. We're going to talk about Nikon and all that good stuff. Dixie, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Amazing. Thanks so much for that great intro. I appreciate it.
It's all true. Aww, you know it. It's all true.
You're awesome. I'm excited to be here today and chat with you.
Cool. Well, let's talk about stuff. So, you know, full disclosure, you and I did an interview before over on the Skyloom Behind the Scene podcast that I also host. But I wanted to invite you on to this show as well, because I want to dive, you know, kind of in a slightly different direction and, you know, and introduce you to the This Week in Photo audience as well as the Behind the Scene audience. If you haven't subscribed to Behind the Scene, search for it and go subscribe to that one too. So yeah, good stuff. So who is Dixie Dixon, right? So I've seen your name. In fact, I was just doing a live stream with a friend of mine who's also a Nikon shooter. And I said, I gotta hang up because I'm getting ready to talk to Dixie Dixon. And he was like, I was like, have you heard of Dixie Dixon? He was like, have I heard of Dixie Dixon? I was like, have you heard of Prince? You know, so tell us, how did you get from, you know, where you were to being kind of a household name in the photography world?
Oh, well, I appreciate that so much. Gosh, it's been a really crazy adventure. I've only had photography jobs. So I started out shooting the cheesy Little League pictures I shot with film. Actually, it was the Nikon FG camera. And so we'd be doing all those cheesy soccer ball, like posing with the soccer balls and, you know, just the team photos and stuff like that. And then I ended up joining the yearbook staff, and my image ended up making the cover of the yearbook. So for me, it was like a way to get out of my shell a little bit. I'm very much a sort of an introvert, so it was sort of felt rebellious and helped me get to know people and communicate and have fun. And so that for me was like a moment where I was like, wow, maybe I could actually do this for a living. So I ended up going off to college. I would have loved to major in photography, but I really thought, you know, maybe I should figure out the business side so I can actually figure out how to make a living doing this. So I ended up studying entrepreneurship at TCU and fell in love with the whole business side. And then I ended up studying abroad with a world-renowned fashion photographer. I literally Googled fashion photography study abroad. And there was one program through Syracuse University. So I got to go and study with Jeff Licata and Doc Mason over in London and Prague and do my first big fashion shoot. And that is when I really fell in love with the fashion photography side of things. So
cool.
Yeah, it's so been a cool. fun adventure. I feel like it was yesterday, but it's crazy how fast time flies. And then I got a job shooting for a TV show, and it just all came together.
yeah, I have so many questions. Like, I'm curious how it works from a, you know, I know a lot of the TWIP audience, I'm sure, has the same question. Like, part one path to success as a photographer seems to be fashion, right? You got to be a fashion/commercial photographer. You got to be that person walking on set and you're in charge and, you know, the house music is thumping in the background. The models are doing their thing. There's a wind machine, you know, blowing the wind and somebody's up there like Stevie Nicks with a white thing. So how do you get there? Like, what's the path from leaving school and entrepreneurship, going through the internship and seeing how it's done from behind the scenes to building a brand like your brand and being sponsored and representing brands like Nikon?
Yeah. So it's been, I always feel like as an entrepreneur, you think you're just going to go, you know, a nice gradual progression upward, but it's like, it's an interesting journey, if you will. There's ups and downs along the way. I mean, my first few years, I was shooting everything. I was shooting weddings and portraits and product. If anyone called me to do a shoot, I knew how to do it. I said yes to almost everything. Yeah, just to pay the bills and whatnot. So I ended up setting up two different websites, my fashion website and then my commercial website. I mean, my wedding website and portrait website. So basically, when people would reach out and they wanted portraits and weddings, I would send them to that website. And then all the fashion stuff on my fashion website was all free work that I had shot for my portfolio. So ultimately, you have to show the type of work that you want to be shooting. So I was wanting to shoot the fashion work. So you have to go out and shoot that work. And then you're going to eventually start attracting those type of clients. So then I started shooting for modeling agencies. And they would do like paid portfolio shoots for their models. It started out as free portfolio shoots. And then they ended up paying me to shoot their models for a while and did that quite a lot. And then that led to like going to boutiques and showing them my work and asking them if I could collaborate. My first magazine shoot was like for Parker County Today magazine. And I remember wanting to, they're like, yeah, just bill us your rate. And I think I billed them $3,000 for the day, which is a good day rate. But then they replied back and said, we're only going to pay $300 for this shoot.
Wow.
And so that was an eye-opening moment for me. Like, editorial work doesn't really pay that much. I mean, there's other magazines that pay more than that, like some of the bigger magazines. But the commercial work, the brands are the ones with the bigger budgets. And those are the ones that you really want to go after. The editorial work feeds your brand and press and marketing, get your name out there. But ultimately, if you want to make good money shooting commercial photography, you want to be shooting for brands and ad agencies.
How do you get into shooting the brands and ad agencies? Like, what's the path if I say, you know, or if a photographer says, you know, Dixie Dixon is my hero, I want to be like her. I want to one day be sponsored by Nikon, and I want to be shooting shooting for good money for these big name brands. What's the path from relative obscurity to, you know, being well known? Is it just doing stuff for free or for $300 until the numbers start adding up, or is there another path?
Oh gosh. Yeah, you don't. I mean, you can shoot personal. I wouldn't recommend shooting for free a lot. If you're shooting personal work for your own portfolio, then that's one thing, because that's building your book. I always do pay my assistant, although the makeup artist and stylist, we all usually work together for the images. But ultimately, the way that I kind of broke into the commercial industry, I built my team on Model Mayhem. So I started networking with stylists and makeup artists and whatnot. And then once I had a little bit of a fashion book, like I maybe had 20, 30 images in a portfolio, I went and cold called. Like when I would go to LA, I would cold call a bunch of the ad agencies in LA and then also the brands. And basically I found their info through agency access. In fact, if you're interested in a commercial photography, agency access is a really amazing tool to learn more about the industry, learn more about bidding. For instance, when I would get an inquiry to bid a job, I would hire a bidding consultant through agency access to help me do the bid. Wonderful Machines, also a really great tool for that sort of thing. But ultimately, you just have to show your work to as many art directors and as many creative directors as you can within the ad agency. So look up an ad agency locally that shoots the kind of brands that you're interested in shooting. And just really all you have to do is try to set up an in-person meeting. And also, sometimes you have to make 20 cold calls and 20 emails to get one in-person meeting.
Does it help to already have established a brand? So back to that, you know, the person that's just starting, should they just build a kick-ass website and then start doing sort of self projects to build up kind of a, this is what I can do, and then go knocking? Or do they do the reverse, go knocking and then put that stuff from those shoots on their website, or some combination? What do you think?
I think the first one that you mentioned, I think try to build your style, find your style, like just take a couple years to shoot the work that you love and paying your bills, shooting other stuff like portraits and whatnot, and building that brand around what you really love to shoot, build that Instagram, build your website. And I think then is a good time to start reaching out to brands. But ultimately, like, I'm very much a perfectionist. And so for me, I was a little bit slower to make those meetings because I was like, my portfolio is not perfect enough. Well, you're never going to be done with your portfolio. So after a couple of years of shooting, like, go out and show your work, because you just never know, you know, what's going to go through and, you know, how you're going to be introduced to certain people. I definitely recommend joining the trade organizations. So when I was in college, I actually took a business course, David Miner. He said, you know what, if you're interested in an industry, join every trade organization within that industry and start getting involved. So in college, I actually joined the student versions of WPPI, APA, which is the Advertising Photography of America, ASMP, PPA, and I started entering the contest. So I ended up winning two contests, one for WPPI and one through PPA. So I got to go to the Bahamas through PPA and network with a bunch of women photographers. And then I got to go to Vegas for free because they gave me like a scholarship. So then I got to network at WPPI. And ultimately, that's how I got to know all these photography brands and get sponsorships like Nikon and G-Tech and whatnot. So that's meeting with the marketing directors there. Yeah, so it all came full circle. But it took a few years. Like, I've been to WPPI probably, gosh, like 8 times or so. So just keeping them updated on your work and stuff is really important. So
Looking at your work, it's diverse, right? In terms of genre specificity, you're not locking yourself down to one specific genre. Right? Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to people that are trying to figure out what their look is and what they want to be known for? Is it best to be good at a bunch of stuff, or should I say, you know what, I'm a fashion photographer and I do that, or I'm a landscape photographer, or I am a commercial, or I'm a food photographer. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to like the bright-eyed young photographer or older photographer that's transitioning? What advice would you give to them to, you know, in terms of focus and being specific on a particular genre?
I would say, I mean, there's 2 ways you can do it. I mean, if you look at photographers like Joe McNally, he's extremely diverse, but he's also really successful. And then you look at other photographers that specialize in like a niche, like really, really specialized. I think right now, coming up in the industry, I honestly think it's probably your best bet to specialize and really create a look, a thing that you shoot best. Because people are going to associate your brand with that, and they're not going to be confused as to what you love shooting and stuff like that. So I think it's important to find the type of models that you love to shoot, find the type of lighting that you love to shoot, the different locations. Is it studio or is it on location? Like, kind of specialize in that, I think, is really important. For me in Texas, I shoot a lot of different stuff because really in Texas, you can't just specialize in fashion. It's a little tougher. So mm-hmm. I shoot a lot of lifestyle commercial work. So it becomes a bit of a mix on my website. So
it keeps you fresh too, right? Because it keeps you exciting and about what you're shooting. Okay, I want to talk about this sort of brass tacks business stuff a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I'm taking the avatar of, like I said, the new photographer that's thinking about getting into this, or they're into it and they're trying to figure their way out and figure their style out and all that. One of the questions that comes up whenever you decide to hang your shingle out or, you know, start making money from this presumably hobby that you're turning pro in is pricing. Like, how do I price myself in the beginning? I know the answer varies, you know, from if you're a wedding photographer, studio, you know, doing portraits or headshots or whatever. It's all over the board.
Yeah.
But looking at fashion, you know, just taking all that other stuff out and you just look at fashion photography, photographer moving into it, maybe he or she has a couple of shoots under their belt. And they feel comfortable and they have their team, like you suggested, they built up a team on Model Mayhem and they're ready to shoot and they feel like they can do the job professionally. What's the path to pricing? Like, is it you get online and look at people, you know, that you admire and undercut them, or charge more than they are and say you're boutique, or charge exactly what they are charging? Like, what's the best method to price yourself?
That is the toughest part of commercial photography by far, because it varies for every client. So the way that I approach pricing, I use a software called BlinkBid, and Lou Lesko came up with it, and it basically gives you, you know, some ideas of what you should be charging, like what the normal day rates are, what the normal usages are for different industries and different areas. So basically it kind of does all of it for you within that software, and you just type in makeup artist, you know, stylist, your day rate plus your usage. So your usage is basically what they're going to use it for, whether they're going to use it for just online usage or like billboards cost more than just online. So really that's a really great way to sort of learn. And also, I noticed on Wonderful Machine, they have a ton of sample estimates that they've done for different clients. So I use that as a tool to look at the estimates. And you also want to look at if the photographer got the job from that estimate. Because the thing is, you know, you never really quite know until you ask your client what their budget range is. So that's actually how I approach most clients. I say, okay, what do you guys have a budget range that you're looking to stick within? Because that kind of tells you right there, if it's, you know, $2,000 or whatever, and they want like everything, like a big crew and all that, that kind of tells you like you're not going to be able to produce it for that. Then you don't have to waste your time creating an estimate for them. Now, if they say
that's
they're
the scary part, isn't that the scary part, Dixie, though? Because that's the scary part where you're like, especially if you get a cagey or a savvy client that says, well, what's your, you know, I'm not going to tell you how much our budget is. You have to tell me how much you charge. And then it's you're shooting in the dark. And then you get to that point where, well, I don't want to outbid myself, but I really want this job, you know, and I won't, I would even do this job for free because I want that brand on my resume, but I don't want to let them know that, you know, and I don't want to. Yes. So how do you've been there, I'm sure. How do you navigate that? Do you navigate that so that you're like, you're not screwing yourself. You're not, you know, you're being compensated, but you don't lose the job, but you're being compensated fairly. Like what's the magic trick for that?
I honestly, anytime I ask them their budget range, if they don't say it on the call, I will re-ask it again in an email. And usually lately, the past few years, they usually will say what it is, because most of the time they kind of have an idea what they're willing to pay for something. And sometimes they tell me the budget range. I'm like, oh, wow, that's actually more than I would have estimated. And then sometimes it's below. And if I really want to do the job, we figure out a way to kind of come in at that rate. But it's funny because I've also started asking on these calls, OK, are you triple bidding this? So a lot of times ad agencies will, it's their duty to give the client three photographer options. So it's called a triple bid. So they want to get three estimates from three different photographers. And then the ad agency usually has a photographer they really want to use. And they tell the client, hey, I really want, you know, they recommend that photographer and they show them all the estimates. But ultimately, it's the client that ends up choosing the final photographer. So if the client really trusts the ad agency, they'll go with their, you know, photographer recommend. So I've actually started asking sometimes, I said, so have you gotten any estimates in yet from the other people that are bidding the job? And if they say yes, I said, okay, cool. Well, what do they come in at?
Good. And, yeah. Keep pushing, then, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like keep pushing. And a lot of times if they really like you and they want to work with you, they'll actually say where the other photographers came in at. And then you can come in somewhere in the middle. Which is really helpful. Or you can come in close to the top, whatever you kind of feel that they're going to want to go with. But ultimately, the more information that you can get out of the client, the better. Because you really got to decide, can I even pull this off for the amount that they're wanting to pay? How many shots are we looking at? It's really just like a matter of trial and error. I have messed up so many estimates and I've not gotten jobs. Like there was some AT&T job that I didn't get that I didn't estimate well. You know, so it's a learning process and it's a gamble. And So it's just, it's sort of like a trial and error, but I would say that using the Blink bid and then also checking out those estimates on Wonderful Machine, just so you can see, because there's so many things that go into commercial photography, from your day rate to the usage. I mean, your day rate could run from $2,000 to $10,000, depending on what it is you're wanting to shoot, then plus the usage, the producer rate. Producers usually run, I would say $750 to $900. Makeup artist rates are usually like $650 a day. You know, stylists are usually $750 a day. So I kind of have these ideas. But you'll see that once you look at the sample estimates, I'd say the commercial estimates on that website. There's a lot that goes into it for sure.
I'm going in there today. I'm gonna look at those today. That sounds fascinating. So I'll put those in the show notes for this. So BlinkBid, Wonderful Machines, Agency Access are the ones I've written. So okay, so here's sort of a philosophical question for you.
Yeah.
When it comes to pricing, this episode's all about pricing.
I love it.
When it comes to pricing, so you could do your math, right? You could do your you know, what we call it in Silicon Valley, COGS, right? Cost of goods.
Yeah.
So you know what it takes to do a particular shot pretty closely. You know what the makeup artist and the stylist and the studio rental, if you're doing that, and you know what all these different fixed costs are. And then you could, in your head, already know that, you know, I need as a salary to make this much as the photographer. And then on top of that, I always mark it up by this percentage. So you come up with that final number. Is that the correct number to bid, though, right? You come up with that final kind of fair and square number that you know, from that math. But then let's say that fair and square number comes to $10,000. Like, boom, okay, for me to get paid and for me to compensate my crew, it's going to be 10 grand for me to do this. But then you find out that the budget is 30 grand for this particular job. Ethically, do you bid them at 10 grand and risk them saying, you know what, she's probably a 10 grand photographer, we were looking for a 30 grand photographer? Or do you go for broke and say $29,000 for this job and then, you know, and take the money and run? What's the ethical way? I don't know. I would do both. Like, what's the ethical way to approach that?
That is such a good question. Such a good question. Because I've actually, when I've bid something and I've underbid it, I've actually not been chosen because I didn't bid enough.
Yes. Price perception. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And I was like I was keeping it really real and just, you know, so like ultimately, so for instance, I read an article about Coca-Cola. They were having two photographers, or three photographers bid a job. And they said, you know, we ended up going with the highest bid because we looked at the other bids and the other two photographers obviously don't know or they don't have what it takes to work with a big brand like Coca-Cola. So, yes. So I don't think it's really necessarily I guess it could be an ethical question, but it's really a branding question. You got to look at how big your brand is that you're looking at. Like Coca-Cola is a huge brand. They're going to be making so much money about the advertising images that you create for them. So if you look at it in that way, you should get compensated more for working with a big brand like Coca-Cola, as opposed to like a small local shop that you're going to give them a really stealth pricing and stuff like that. So ultimately people are making money off of the images. And if they're a big brand and a big ad agency, it would make sense, I think, to increase your rate. And we do that. For bigger brands and bigger ad agencies. But that's a really good question. Yeah.
When it comes to usage and all that stuff as well. Yeah, if it's, you know, Joe Bob's startup over here with scraping by versus company that's got a market cap of $700 billion, then you could flex it. You know, the other side of that, I wonder what your thoughts on this is. The other side of it is your own brand positioning, especially in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, you could, you know, let's make the assumption that diamonds are diamonds, right? You could go buy a diamond from the Walmart jewelry counter, or you could go buy a diamond from Tiffany's, right? And all things being equal, they're both diamonds, right? They're made, but they're marketed very differently. Mm-hmm. And one's going to be more expensive. And when you walk in, the atmosphere is, it feels like you're going to be paying a lot of money. And one, you feel like you want to look for the red tag markdowns, right? So you know, from a branding, a self-branding perspective, does it make sense to price yourself on the high end no matter what and be prepared to lose those low-end jobs? Because I would imagine Tiffany's loses a lot of low-end customers to Walmart, right? Do you want to be in that vein, or do you want to be in the Walmart vein? Where do you fall on that?
Right. Yeah, 100%. That's really well said. I think as a photographer, it's not only your brand, but it's funny because when I interned for Matthew Jordan Smith, he always said, if you want, you know, to create this photography company, you don't want to be competing on price. And he's like, yep. The way that you do that is you create an experience for your client. It's not just like a run of the mill, show up and shoot photography studio. You create this amazing experience. I think he said he actually sends flowers to all his clients the day before the shoot. And he just creates this amazing, just feel good experience. So I've always loved doing that. I love having the right music on set, you know, and all those things. And just creating a really amazing atmosphere for the shoot, like having good food on set and everything like that. So I think that definitely helps, because you definitely, I mean, I don't want to be the Walmart of photography. No. I want to be definitely more of the high-end feel. So I think it's important that your brand matches that, like you said.
And it, and it depends on, you know, no shade on Walmart level photographers.
Oh, of course.
Right. If that's the brand that you want to build, it just depends, mm-hmm. I think, on the brand that you want to build and how much work you want to do. Because you know, I think, I forget what I was reading some book the other day. I was talking about customer acquisition. You can put on your entrepreneur, you know, hat for the,
yes.
It was talking about customer acquisition, and it was talking about how much work, you know, clients that are paying low amounts generate, you know, in terms of customer service and calls and refunds and all that stuff, how much work that customer generates versus the customer that's paying high end. And it's a market difference. The net of it was low end customers, let's call them, you know, that are paying for low end price products generate 90% of the customer service calls versus high end clients that are, you know, we don't care how much it costs, we just want good photography. Those people don't generate, you know, it's, you don't get the problems from those. Have you seen that in your world, in your day to day?
Yes, definitely. That's so well said. I love that you brought that up. It's the 80-20 rule. Have you heard the 80-20 rule? Yes.
Yeah, the Pareto principle. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, the clients that nickel and dime you are going to take up 80% of your time. So why would you focus on those lower end clients? You may as well charge a decent, nice rate, because those clients that pay for it actually respect you more, I think. And they also, when they're paying a good price for something, I think that they have a different viewpoint. They come from a different place and they're not going to be on the nickel and diming side and whatnot. So I think that was really well said. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's true. It's interesting that that's one of the things I like about this world of photography is, and I've said this before, it's, you know, it appeals to the geek in us with all the gear and the computers and software. It appeals to the psychologist in us, you know, for you when you're dealing with models and staff and you have to be empathetic and get the right mood and emotion. It's also physics and science, right? Because of light and all, it's all working together. And you can never be a master of any one of these things, but you can sure try hard and get good at it. So
that's so true. That's well said.
Yeah. So what about, we'll wrap this up on still with money, right? So you know, we talked about pricing, we talked about brand building and price perception and all that. And again, I know this is a loaded question, and the real answer is it depends. You know, it depends on geography, it depends on your skill set, everything. Mm-hmm. But when it comes, not revealing anything personal, obviously, but when it comes to like how much money you can make as, say, a fashion photographer. You know, some people have the perception that you're living in a high rise, you know, in somewhere in Dallas, and, you know, you've got a car, a driver and a personal assistant taking notes as you walk out of the door and all that stuff. Is it like that? You know, like what can these photographers, realistically, people that want to move into fashion, what can they aspire to make? What level salary? Are we looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, multiple six figures? Like, what does it look like? It's starting with a blank slate. No one knows anything, right? What is, what's an idea of a direction?
What's an idea? I would say all of the above. I mean, you look at Annie Leibovitz, and she's getting, you know, driven around, I'm sure, and huge, you know, $20,000 day rates. And so you can definitely get there. I'd say I'm working towards it.
That's awesome. As she sits, in, as she sits doing an interview from her guest house.
Be awesome. But no, it takes time though. It takes time. I mean, gosh, my first few years I was living very, very, what's the word? Well, you know, I wasn't living high because the thing is you don't want to get locked in a lifestyle. Like, cause I think I told you on the last interview, I actually had gotten a business job when I first started and an investment with an investment firm. And I almost took that job, but my mentor said to me, if you want to go after photography, like now is the time, just go after it because you don't want to get locked in a six-figure lifestyle right out of the gate and then try to jump into photography and you're getting paid less than that and you've already got this huge house and all this all these things that you have to pay for. So he said, go after it. So I would live in my little studio apartment and do my thing and be creative and, you know, figure out how to make it work. And it's definitely been, it's been a balance and it kind of ebbs and flows. I feel like as a commercial photographer, you have to kind of be a saver because, you know, one month you may have a ton of jobs and the next month you might not have any.
That's the gig economy, right?
Yeah. So I think that you can learn the business side. And if you can create a lot of leads, you can definitely do very, very well in this industry. And, you know, I'm still working on it. I'm working on the business. I'm not like a, you know, not like an Annie Leibovitz by any means, but, you know, I'm working at it and we'll see where it goes. But I think that you have the ability, like if you look at like Corey Rich Productions and Joe McNally, you know, they're like really high up in their field and I'm working towards that, but I don't know what, I have no idea what their salaries are.
Yeah, me either. Me either.
I
but the path to get there is
mine,
the fun.
To be quite honest. Yeah.
You know, but you know, like the Joes and the Joe McNallys of the world, those, the path from, you know, wherever a photographer is to where they are, that's the fun part. It's not, you know, getting to where they're, because where they are may not be relevant when you get to that point, right? It may be something completely different and you need to be shooting with these kind of virtual reality and all this other stuff. So you make a, you know, you got to follow your own path and not pattern them so much. Yeah. You know, it's interesting what you said about you said, yeah, I'm paraphrasing, but you're talking about how your mentor, I'm guessing it was Matthew Jordan Smith.
Yeah. It was actually a business mentor at the time. Okay. This is before I met Matthew. Yeah. Right out of college.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're when that mentor cautioned you against taking a high paying job and then following your dream. That is powerful because that is hard, right? To make that decision. That takes a lot of commitment to your art to be, you know, hey, I have a bird in the hand, you know, I have a six figure bird in the hand and I could go get that house. I could get that car. I could, you know, have a life that's powered by that level of salary versus this question mark, right? Of I don't know if I'm going to be good enough. I don't know if the market, you know, can I make a money at this? Is art, you know, can I do it? You're like the parent of that person would say, you better go take that job, right? So true. How do you have that, you know, like you personally, how were you able to like make that call and not go for the money on door number one and instead take the question mark on door number two? How'd that happen?
Gosh, it was tough. It was tough. I will say that when I was just getting out of school, and I remember it like it was yesterday, calling that investment firm after I had already accepted the job and then saying, hey, man, I really appreciate your offer, but I'm going to have to turn it down.
That hurts me. That hurts me just thinking about it. It's like, hey, Google, I know you want me to come work for you and my office is ready, but I don't think I'm going to do it.
For sure. It was a tough one, but I just realized that I'm going to be in that office from 8 a.m. every day to at least 5 p.m. Every single day. And it's going to be really hard for me to also try and do photography. And that's my dream. I mean, that's my love. I mean, I enjoy investments and business and all of that stuff, but photography ultimately was just calling me more. And I felt more of a resonance with that photography dream than I did the investment firm. Because ultimately, like, I didn't have any things that were really that I had to support anyone or anything like that. So it was a little maybe easier. And also, my parents have been super positive. And they're like, yeah, if you love photography, you should go after it. They weren't the kind of folks that were like, no, you need to get like a safe job. They were never like that. They always told me to go after it. You never know what you can do until you try it out. If it doesn't work, I always have that business resume I can fall back on and go get a job if I had to. But if I was to give advice, instead of getting like a full-time job, like say you're trying to pay the bills and figure it out, get a part-time job doing something and do photography as well, because then you have time for both. Create your side hustle. You can still do this if you have a full-time job. It's just going to take some extra hours. That side hustle is a lot. So there's so many ways to do it. And that's not like the one way that you have to break into this industry by any means. You know, you can do this and do the side hustle and be bidding jobs and not advertising that you have another job, just saying you're into photography full time. So there's so many ways to do this, and you can definitely, you know, make it and figure it out. It's just it's an adventure.
It is. It's a continuing adventure. The continuing adventures of Dixie Dixon, right?
So, yes. So
how do you like? Are you? I know you. Well, before we end the interview and we talk about where people can go find you and all that stuff. Do you have any educational resources out there, like any courses or anything on pricing and branding and business that people can go check out?
I do, actually. I worked on a 10-day fashion production with Pro EDU. I think it used to be RGG EDU. Now it's Pro EDU. Yeah. Those guys were awesome. Yeah. Gary, yes. Gary and Rob. So we went over to Brazil. I was the only girl on the crew and they filmed basically start to finish what it takes to do all these fashion productions. We did a bunch of different shoots. We went over pricing, all of these things. And it's like a 22-hour tutorial. So it's a lot of information packed in there. So we did that a couple years ago, and it has all that info in there. So definitely helpful. But I'd say, yeah, the pricing, it's tough. And it's so funny because I remember when I got my first big job, I thought it was going to be like $10,000, and it was like a six-figure thing. And I was like, oh my goodness, like this is a pinch me moment. You know what I mean? So it can happen. Yeah. You know, it can happen. Crazy. And there are those jobs.
That's a life-changing email, right? Because one night you're like, you know, can I make rent? You know, everything good. Then the next day, oh, by the way, we're going to give you six figures to do this amazing gig and all this stuff. How did that feel when you got that job? Oh, was it just like, did you have to go run around the block and pinch yourself? Or
I did. Like, I did. It was the best. It's funny because you get really excited and then you suddenly realize, oh, God, the pressure. The pressure that I just signed up for, you know, which pressure is actually a good thing. It keeps you on your game. And I think, you know, it comes with just taking it in stride and figuring it out. And but you can definitely do it. There are amazing companies out there to work for. There's so many. Everyone needs content these days. Right now in COVID, it's a little tough. because we're not shooting productions right now. So it's sort of one of those things that we're just going to have to ride out and see what happens. But it's definitely an adventure.
Yeah. Well, pressure, right? They say pressure makes diamonds. But, whatever it's the pressure's being exerted on has to be strong to begin with, or else it'll just turn to cold dust, right?
So that's so well said.
Yeah.
And pressure is earned, true. I think. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. True. Yeah. That's right. Good work is rewarded with more good work. Cool. So exactly. If people want to check you out, they want to see some of your work. Of course, we'll have a gallery of your work in the blog post for this episode on This Week in Photo. But if they want to connect with you, hire you, all that good stuff, do you have sort of an area where people can go find everything they need?
Absolutely. It's just dixiedixon.com, dixiedixon.com. And then my Instagram is under I am Dixie Dixon. So Dixie Dixon wasn't available, so you have to have the I am and before it.
I like it. And it matches Nikon's. Nikon have an I? They had an I am campaign at some point. Yeah.
They did. Funny because I wasn't even thinking about it. And I just put that before. And then I realized it. I was like, oh, perfect. We go hand in hand.
Yep. Well, yeah. Before we close it off, can you talk a little bit about Nikon and why you chose Nikon? Not to make this a Nikon commercial, but to be 100% truthful, like I was telling you, I was a little bit late for this interview because we record our Twit Pro community critiques on Mondays. And I noted during that critique that most of the images, no joke, I think it was like 20-something entries in there. Most of the entries were Nikons, you know, because people put the title, the description, and it was Nikon this, it was Nikon that, it was Nikon Z, you know, it was just Nikon. And I don't know if my community is a core sample of the photography world, but there sure are a lot of Nikon shooters in there. What's going on there? Why do you represent Nikon? What drove you to
Nikon? Gosh, I'm a diehard fan.
I can tell by the colors on that couch, by the way.
Yes. I mean, I am such a super fan. So I've always shot Nikon. I started with that original film camera, and both my grandfather and my dad shot Nikon as well. They were big fans of Nikon. And so ultimately when I was in school, I got when I was in yearbook, I got one of the smaller Nikon digitals. And then during college, when I was shooting for other photographers, they would make me use their gear. And I just never liked it as well, like the other brands that they were having me shoot. So I would always go back to my Nikon. And now fast forward, I've been shooting like the Z7 and the D850 a lot. And gosh, my Digitech, who's the guy that mans the computer for all the productions, like, so we shoot tethered and it goes straight to computer. And he's zooming into all these raw files. And most of my assistants have all switched to Nikon because just the sharpness and the crazy just bokeh and the skin tones, they were just blown away by how sharp they are out of the camera. You don't really need to do any sharpening, honestly. So I think that was a cool testament to that. And then I've also had retouchers work on different kinds of files, and he's always said that the Nikon Z7 and D850 files are the cleanest right out of the RAW. So I thought that was really cool to hear. I was like, all right, so I'm
That's cool.
So I'm validated.
That's cool. Sure. You know, like I said, I'll link over to everything. Make sure, if you can, send me a link to that course that you have over on ProEU.
We'll
link over to that as well. So
perfect.
Cool. Dixie Dixon, you'll have to come back on the show again. And
I would love to
talk about process. I have so many more questions for you. I want to talk about, you know, your tethering process. Are you using tether tools? Are you just plugging in? Like, how does all that work? I want to know it all. So you'll have to come back.
Sure. Yeah, it was so awesome talking with you. You're so awesome. I love your work and just your energy. So thank you for today. I'm really grateful.
You're welcome. So, no, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for coming on. If you can't tell, I'm a little bit interested in photography and business. So
I love that. We're just nerding out here.
Yeah. We get to have drinks and talk about this stuff for hours and hours.
Yes, I love it. Definitely.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Dixie Dixon, thank you so much. And enjoy the rest of your week.
I appreciate it. Bye.
Okay. See you later. Bye. All right.
This is Twitter.